This is Application Paranoia Season 2, Episode 1. Welcome to a brand new season of Application Paranoia, our podcast dedicated to application security, DevOps, and AppScan. I'm Colin Bell, and with me on the panel for our second season, I have again my wonderful colleagues, Rob Cuddy and Chris Stewart. Hi, Rob. Welcome to season two. How are you? And how was the break away from us?
Hey, Colin. Great. It's exciting to be here to start a brand new season this year. The break was great. Had a lot of time to get away and hang out with family and check out Christmas lights and all kinds of cool things like that. So it was really good.
Yeah. And are you keeping your Christmas lights on? There's a campaign here in Ireland to keep Christmas lights on through COVID.
I could get down with that, but my block, we kind of took them all down probably the first weekend, and then I left them up right until my daughter went back to university last weekend. So I took them down last weekend, but not as bad as the guys over in Balboa Island. There was a house we walked around where their theme was bears. This house had nearly 5,000 bears on display in some form or another. It was quite the scene. So.
Yeah, sounds like they were barely there.
Yes. Yeah, well, it was a little bit unbearable after a while.
So. Oh, my God. There it is.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
You get a pun in even before you're welcomed. I love
you
it.
You know, it's crazy.
And how was your break?
Oh, it was fantastic. We looked at Christmas lights one day ourselves. We have a house by us that goes all out, and they do it to music. You tune to a radio station, you sit and watch their little production. It's got some comedy, some humor. It's a lot of work. I don't know why they put so much work, but I appreciate it. Oh, yeah. Mostly it was sitting around doing nothing for a little while. It was great.
Yeah, I did the same. I actually switched off for 2 weeks and then came back to 3,000 emails.
So. Yeah. Still working through the list. Oh, my gosh. 2 weeks yes. later, I haven't gotten through them all yet.
Yeah. Joy to the world.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've been taking heed of our many listeners. And so as we move into season two, we're going to make some minor changes to our format. Our first change will involve keeping our special guests to their own dedicated episode. This will allow our listeners to get straight to the good content, and it'll also allow more time for our guests, which I think is important. What do you think?
Yeah. No, I like that idea a lot. Things could be fun.
And so every other episode, so the ones that have an odd number like this one, we're going to focus in on security hot topics, AppScan news, and normal ramblings, which means weird things. In this episode, for example, we'll be discussing the recent SolarWinds hack and booze fairies. I'm sure they're related somehow. Even better, we're also going to have one of our product managers join us on these special episodes, the ones with the odd numbers, that is, so we can get deeper into AppScan changes. So I'm delighted to welcome Florin Coeda to the panel this week. Florin is, for those who don't know him, is our product manager for AppScan Source and Static Analysis. So welcome, Florin, and, welcome to the show, firstly, and also, how was your break? Did you get a break?
Thank you. Happy to be on the show. I could barely contain my excitement of being here. I couldn't help myself hearing Rob doing that, and Chris, I had to jump in. It's probably my favorite part of the episode is hearing all the news and the puns. It was a good break, like everyone else. I enjoyed it. We had a bit of drama with the Christmas lights locally. It was a fun thing to watch. Someone was going around cutting the Christmas lights, so it was a bit of a
wonder if that's against the law. Is the destruction of private Christmas light property?
Dang.
You're going to get one day staring at Christmas lights as your punishment.
Yes. Yeah, we had a lot of theories circling in the Facebook groups from rogue squirrels, which are known to attack, and TikTokers.
And booze fairies.
And now I want to add the booze fairies to my list. Although I have to say I'm oblivious to what that means, I'm sure it has something to do with it.
Probably we're gonna learn a lot about that very important subject today. You can't sleep until you've learned about booze fairies.
Yeah, they're going around cutting Christmas lights. Sounds like a 2020 update on Scrooged or something like that.
Yeah. Squirrelmageddon.
Well, the fun fact is someone actually had a video of a squirrel doing this to them at work, cutting their video cameras. And they, someone was saying, you know, they're kids. And someone said, could be squirrels. We have a video to show it.
Or if those are like pigeon messengers, somebody trained squirrels to chomp up Christmas lights just because they're angry at the holiday.
You know what? There's just another conspiration in the making there with rogue squirrels.
Yes. Well, then you could reuse them at Easter to go around and smash eggs.
No, you'd have to train bunnies, I think. That's appropriate.
Yeah, that's a different mythical beast.
Yes. A jackrabbit, or what do they call it? A jackalope? I have a head of a jackalope on my wall. It's pretty crazy. I didn't know they were real.
AppScan News, normally we would talk to Chris, but because we've got one of our illustrious product managers, and we have Florin, we're going to ask Florin about what's happened. Now, we haven't done an episode since early December, Florin, so I'm sure there's lots have happened. And, you know, we'd like to dig a little bit deeper. So do you have maybe a high-level overview of some of the things that have happened around either ASOC or AppScan, CodeSweep, any of those products since we were last done?
We have quite a few updates we've been going through. We're probably going to start with at the beginning of December when some of our partners that deal with the code education built integration with us. So we had our friends from HackEDU that build integration with us. So if you're looking to do some training, they can actually look at some AppScan results and suggest some training for you. And we've also been doing some work on our dynamic analysis. We've been updating our engines, continuing to improve those. As you know, we kind of add more signatures to dynamic analysis. So we've been doing a bit of that to start December. Now, the middle of December is the part where I get very excited because, like Colin said, I deal with static analysis. So that's when we added support for Java 11. We've done some really cool include-exclude behavior for Java as well. We're using namespaces. So if anyone was using Gradle or Maven in the past, now it's very easy to include and exclude code. You can pretty much do a allow list or block list from the command line, which I was very excited about. I've been playing with that as soon as it came out. And finally, we added infrastructure as code scanning. Now, this is the part where things get exciting because we have a lot to talk about when we talk about infrastructure as code and how that changed development. But there's also some aspect of it that we can cover from the security part, from the code security part, because at the end of the day, if it's code, you're bound to do something wrong with it. And more often than not, it's obvious things that we can capture.
Maybe for people who are not familiar with it, the concept, because it's a fairly new one, can you elaborate, or maybe Chris can elaborate on what infrastructure as code is and what it entails?
Oh, yeah. So infrastructure as code is more colloquially known as Docker or Kubernetes or things of that nature, where you're setting up an environment to run your stuff. So I'm sure people have heard of Docker in the past and being able to use Docker and exposing ports incorrectly or giving them too many permissions and things like that. It can be massively abused if you're not careful. And the new scanner we have makes sure you're not doing those big no-nos when it comes to Docker or Kubernetes or the configuration files to set those suckers up. So it's kind of a no-brainer. Scan your stuff that has Docker or Kubernetes configuration files, and we'll tell you if you done did something wrong or if you perhaps should do something different because of X, Y, or Z reason. I mean, there's just, if you took a look at even just Docker's security requirements and what they suggest you think about, it's like a novel. There's a lot. I mean, we're talking about, you know, encapsulating code into what is effectively a tiny computer that you can ship anywhere, much like Java can run anywhere once you've compiled it. The Docker implementation on Linux, Mac, Windows are effectively, as far as we're concerned as developers anyway, they're effectively the same. We give you a Docker image, it runs the sucker, it gets you what you want, and off you go. But that running the sucker, that fluidity, that expression of ease, that portability comes at a cost. You need to be sure you're careful with how you build this thing so that it doesn't become exposed in ways that you don't want it exposed.
And what Chris said there, it's quite important to mention, you know, these are kind of like tiny computers, but the thing with Docker and Kubernetes and infrastructure as code is people a lot of times kind of put an equal sign between this and the virtual machine. But the level of isolation you have between a virtual machine and a host and the level of isolation you have between a container and a host is completely different. The container is just a process that runs with some special parameters, you know, some allocated memory, some allocated user spaces. And it's so easy to get those wrong, or in some cases, it's just easy to ignore them. And that can affect you quite a bit.
There was a hackathon thing that we did at the Think conference not too long ago. I believe it was Think. But at any rate, our team, in order to solve, it was a capture the flag situation where you had to solve hacks or you had to hack a system, and they were hosted on Docker. And oh my goodness, we were behind for a little while, and then we shot ahead because we had rooted the Docker host because they hadn't configured it right. So bang, 24 flags in like 5 seconds just from rooting the host from a Docker image. It's like, this is important stuff, people. I mean, it has a funny win, to be sure, but it's like, look, if you don't secure your Docker environment, even in Capture the Flag, where you're supposed to, you know, hack the Docker image itself, bad things can happen. So I thought that was pretty funny.
I'm excited about this just because of the potential, right? If you think about where infrastructure as code had its beginning, right? It comes out of this sort of DevOps mentality where you're trying to test and build everything in production-like environments. And so people were using design tools, right, to lay out database servers, the connections, your WebSphere configurations, what that environment was going to look like, and try to then encapsulate it so that you could automate kind of checking code in and running a build and then stand up an environment that looks like production and then test against it, right? So it's that whole cycle. Well, now being able to bring security into that space just adds a whole nother dimension and gets people thinking at the outset, right? How do I lay out these environments? And I think it's all goodness for developers that way, if they can think about, hey, when I'm making that little icon and connecting that database server to something, if I've got security aspects associated with it, that just makes me better at that point in dealing with stuff and being able to find things. So I think the potential here is huge.
Yeah, this is OS hardening, or the general process of hardening, meaning application security. I think in application security, traditionally with static analysis, we'll look for parameters of things which are bad. But it was, in a way, some hardening. But now it's even closer to the actual process of hardening an OS, hardening a hardware system, hardening a machine. I think people will understand a bit better if they don't have the concept of application security, of application development. When they start looking at some of the results coming out of AppScan, respective of IAC, it will be easier for them to understand what AppScan is doing and how it's working. And hopefully will act as a bridge for them to understand, oh, actually, it's not much of a difference. You know, I have to harden the code the same way I do it with my OS. I shouldn't run as a privileged user. I shouldn't run as root. I shouldn't mount, you know, parts of the system which can expose my host. But yes, we're excited about IAC, and I hope that this will open another audience to use of AppScan, which is the ops people. I know DevOps, it's all about having the mentality of everyone does everything together. But we still see a lot of dedicated resources. I still talk to people that are responsible for the ops operations. They do the scanning, and they have a pretty good understanding of containers. So hopefully they'll see the results and be like, ah, hang on a second. That's something for me to have a look at, something for me to use with the tool.
And this is running, just to confirm for people, I know the answer, but just to confirm it, but this is running with our standard ASOC. So if you have ASOC's license, you can take advantage of this. Is that correct?
Absolutely. This runs with our static analysis. You just run your scan. If you have your Docker file next to your code, we'll look at the Docker file, you know, be nosy about it, see what's in there, see if there's anything we can recommend about the Docker file, and then let you go with it.
So when you say Dockerfile, does this also include Helm charts?
It does not include Helm charts. So the support we have at the moment has been focused specifically on Dockerfiles, on YAML pod configurations. Those were the ones that I think a lot of times developers will probably get more hands-on with, as well as looking at some of the script files they're using. I like to build my own script files. I don't have to go and deploy an application and rewrite the commands. I'll just build a script file and reuse that. So we're doing the same thing here, kind of looking for some Docker instructions, Docker commands that we can grab from a script file, and then identify if there is a problem there. And if there is a problem, we'll tell you about it. And one thing we've done this time for some rules, we are also looking at README files. I know this sounds like a weird one, but I was talking with our chief scientist on all things security, Chris, and we are looking at projects, and they're telling you how to run a Docker file, and they keep coming with what was the number one don't do it thing on the OWASP list. And we said, you know what? Let's add this rule, look for it in the README file. If everyone's mounting the Docker socket to a container, let's tell them about it. Don't do it. It's a bad idea. Find an alternative way to control your image.
Yeah. So it turns out some of those websites that help you figure out how to do X, Y, or Z don't necessarily take into consideration why you shouldn't do it in X, Y, or Z way. They don't take security into consideration at all in many of those posts on the unmentioned website that we all use to figure out how to write code.
And then there's always a bit of a delay for it to come to AppScan Source. So would that be in the next release of AppScan Source that we see this as well? Or
it will probably be the next release. So not the first release of the year, will be the second release of the year. But we do want to make this available to AppScan Source as well, because we know people will be interested in looking at containers from either a cloud or on-premise solution. It's very likely that their application is going to be deployed similarly to what everyone else is doing. And a lot of these technologies are not specifically, hey, it only has to be deployed in the cloud. It could be your own private cloud.
Okay, so something else you mentioned before we started talking about IAC was Java 11. So tell me about Java 11 and why that's important. I know, Chris, you think it's very important.
Yeah, so Java 9 and above sort of completely changed the model of how Java works through the use of modules and us being able to analyze modules appropriately and draw the links between the class files that are now in modules as opposed to, you know, jars or things like that was a bit of a challenge. I mean, it's not the same animal anymore, really. Java 9 builds on Java 8, sure. It has a lot of the same classes, sure, but they're not really stored in the same way. They're not really exposed in the same way. And they sort of encapsulated a lot of this stuff to make Java much more modular, I guess, is probably the thing they were going for, which is pretty cool. I mean, it's really neat how you can use Java now. But we needed an engine that could understand that new world and to figure out how to draw those paths that we could draw before and how to include this, that, or the other thing that we needed to include. And it was a pretty Herculean effort on our part to understand the new Java world versus the old Java world, which is more complete, I guess, is the lack of a, for lack of a better term. You'd have this giant pool of stuff and you probably use maybe 1% of it for every application, but new Java, you don't have a giant pool of stuff. You have individual, you know, puddles, and you grab the parts and pieces that you need and you put it together in your cup and you just drink what you need. So it's really cool how they put it together. But for us to build an engine that could understand that in compiled form was a bit of a challenge. And we're pretty excited that we're able to push it out and get it out there in the world. And you can now start, you know, scanning on a version of Java that is currently in active support, as opposed to the old version, which is Java 1.8. I don't even think that's in support anymore. That's over and done with. So we need to kind of move into this new world of Java 11, which is the world of Java now.
Yeah, and we've a lot of customers looking for us to do this.
It's been a push for a while. And we still do scan Java 8, so it's not like it's one or the other. It's all the way up to and including Java 11. I should say 14 or whatever it is. The functional underlying change hasn't really been modified since Java 9 up to the latest version.
Florin, why we have you, and I know near and dear to your heart, is CodeSweep. We've talked a lot about CodeSweep, but maybe you can give us some updates on what's happened to that in the last couple of months, because we probably haven't talked about it since around the time it was released. You know?
So... yeah, over the last couple of months, we've been adding languages. I think the popularity of CodeSweep is growing right now. I have one of those pretty Macs with a little LED strip at the top, so I create a script so I can see what we are with the downloads. Over 6,500 as of this day, and it's only getting more popular. And yes, we are adding more languages. As we do add support for languages where we can understand the source code and analyze the source code, we try to add that to CodeSweep. And over the year, we've added more languages. Some of the bigger changes that we've done is we've added some mobile capabilities. I think beginning of the fall, meaning of autumn, wherever in the world you are, whatever you call it. So we started adding some mobile languages capabilities for Android, Objective-C, Xamarin, and React Native. We know those are some very popular frameworks out there that we didn't support previously. And then we went to add a few more frameworks. like Ionic. And I think the end of the year, we added what was one of the most popular non-supported languages we saw through CodeSweep, which was Vue.js. And okay. That is now officially supported through CodeSweep, and it will allow people to do some scanning. We did some improvements as well. So if you're an ASOC customer, if you're one of the enterprise users or one of the paying users and you're scanning things through the regular channels, automation, CI/CD, CodeSweep now looks to see, hey, this code here that I'm investigating, was this analyzed before? And if it was analyzed before, and if an issue identified was marked as noise, it will no longer report it. So it will keep things very focused on what's new, what was introduced in the code, allowing developers to focus on whatever new thing they're adding to their environment.
Okay. And at some point, obviously not straight away, but will IAC go into CodeSweep as well, or is that sort of not really suitable for it?
It's definitely a tricky question. You know, I never want to answer something I don't have the right answer for, but the plan is to have it in there. The view is that IAC will benefit a lot the ops people, and if they do write their own Docker configurations, if they do run their Kubernetes, and wherever else we end up extending this capability to, they will benefit from this. So yes, we do want to look at adding IAC capabilities to CodeSweep. I've seen probably VS Code for the first time being used by one of the ops guys in a large dev shop. So I think this will just be the perfect thing for that kind of audience. It will help them a lot.
Yeah, and it makes sense, right? If you think about it, what organizations who are doing a lot of infrastructure as code really want is for those ops folks to design environments that go back into development teams. So they're basically saying, hey, here's what production should look like. Here's an environment that we want you to build in and test against so that you don't get those version mismatches and dependency issues when you're moving up through the food chain, right? And so it makes sense to me when you think about that ops guy designing it down, and then he gives it to a developer. And if CodeSweep can then verify, you know, hey, the developer changed the YAML file or put another setting in or kind of did these things, it just makes it so much easier for those guys to get on the same page, you know, and make sure that those environments are going to then move forward, right? Because if you're from a development side, right, and Chris, I'm sure you've dealt with this a ton, right? If you are doing something on your machine and you need to update a component or something like that, and that doesn't mirror what's in production, you know, now you're testing apples and oranges. And maybe the right thing to do is, hey, production needs to move forward with, you know, that updated component that you're depending on for that application change you're putting in. But getting those things sorted out and sort of being able to give the ops guy a heads up saying, hey, you know, I depend on Java 11 and you're running Java 9, right? Those kinds of things become really important.
We're going to have a new segment now. We're going to do our hot topic of the month, which hopefully over the course of this season, we'll be able to bring in, you know, some security-related topics and various things. So for this week, I thought, and even though it's probably a little bit dated now, because it's a few weeks since this happened, I thought it would be good to discuss the SolarWinds breach. No better person to maybe give us an outline of what that is than Chris. You know, what's this all about, and why does this matter?
So this is a fine example of that open window on the 400th floor that was attacked by Halo jumpers. Oh my gosh, the complexity of this hack is just insane. I mean, they rewrote a source file to have malware imprinted on the source file, did the compile, got rid of the evidence, and now your compiled binaries don't actually reflect the truth of your source files anymore. It's absolutely astronomically insane how this thing was able to do what it was able to do. But effectively, what it would do is hijack the MS build process and do all of this, and then MS build would kick in, compile that file, and off it goes. And it hides itself so well. It looks like SolarWinds actual network traffic as it was sending this information to get whatever it wanted on the system, open the back door, whatever you have. It would use SolarWinds network protocol even. I mean, this was a very, very well thought out, likely funded attack on the SolarWinds product itself. The theory is it was, you know, a certain country who shall remain nameless, but nobody's taken, from what we can see or what we can read about, nobody's taken responsibility for it yet, but it is a nasty one. But really, the big takeaway I get from this is zero trust environment. You can't trust anything, including your build machines that you think are perfectly natural and perfectly normal. Maybe we should probably be making sure the stuff on our build machines is okay. And we do have a product that does that for you, BigFix, which can go in and check to see if you are actually, you know, hit by this SolarWinds, or the same thing that hit SolarWinds, I should say, this sunspot nonsense. They can go in and see whether or not your build system is clean or whether it's not. And if it isn't clean, it can quarantine that sucker off and you won't have to use it anymore. So that's kind of a big deal to really put forth the defense in depth. It's not just about SaaS, DAS, you know, IaaS for application security or network monitoring or firewalls or so on and so forth. This thing sent its messages out through the firewall because it looked like SolarWinds traffic. So you can't just trust the regular things. You have to know what's on your system. And BigFix is a kind of a built for that exact purpose, to inventory what you have installed and running on each of these systems and really know what your environment is involved with. I don't know if I ever had quite an appreciation for something like that as much as I did as I was reading through this flaw. And I don't even know if you can blame SolarWinds for what happened to them. I mean, this is a next level hack we're talking about.
Right. Right. And it's malicious, right? That's the thing that I keep scratching my head over when I think about this is how do you prevent somebody who has legitimate access to something from doing something bad with it?
Yeah, not only that, but hiding any possible compilation errors through using a Pragma, silent it is like, oh my gosh, how does this even happen? What are you supposed to do? Decompile your compiled binaries and compare that decompile with your source code? Is that the level we're getting to now? And the answer to that might be maybe. Maybe that is the answer. That's like the sledgehammer never going to happen again approach, I imagine. But realistically, that's hard to implement for every team out there on the planet. I mean, time is money. How do you attack this problem? BigFix has an answer. Why would you go through that effort? Well, there's a part of me that thinks maybe that's what we should be doing, is comparing the decompiled bits to the compiled bits and seeing whether or not we got what we thought we got. I mean, oh my God, goodness, this hack is just, it's subtle. It's professional. It's some of the best work I've ever seen anyway. This is nutty.
Yeah, there's a really good article from Dan Wolf, who's the product manager for BigFix. So BigFix is a HCL software product, which we're delighted is part of our family, you know, at HCL Software. But he said that, you know, IT and security teams using BigFix can quickly determine systems having the Orion software installed, detect if compromised versions of Orion are present, and help to isolate infected systems. I mean, that's a really good shout out for, you know, why you would use BigFix, as you put it. I mean, you know, these things do happen, that things get compromised, but it's how you can retaliate, I think, is really, and recover is really the important thing for businesses, you know?
Yeah, I think it's important to point out too, SolarWinds published a blog going over exactly how they got hacked, how the pattern is. I mean, I think this is a huge, huge feather in the cap for them. I mean, this is, to be quite frank, the most embarrassing thing that can happen to a company, the most devastating thing that can happen to a company is a hack like this that affects all of your clients, some of them government, you know, clients. That's, it's not a good look, but they published this blog and this is how it happened, guys. Protect yourselves. This is how we got. So I think that's kind of a good thing. That's one of the things that a lot of businesses out there in the world today are afraid to do. And that gives more power to the darkness. I think it's important for companies that do get hacked to say, this is how it happened, guys. This could happen to you. This could be you next. So I think as a leader in this space, they did a really good job kind of disclosing how this happened, how it was able to happen, how it went under the radar and all that. There's only so much you can. I mean, it was a Halo jump, for crying out loud. How do you defend against that? But it's good that they point out what happened.
Yeah, I think you're spot on here, Chris, because, I mean, the more transparency that comes up, the more we get to, you know, we are able to deal with these kinds of things, right? And actually start looking at, well, yeah, okay, how do you prevent this? Or what could have been done differently? And those kinds of things, right? The secret really is in sharing kind of, hey, here's what happened, right? And I think when people unpack all of this, they go, well, wait a minute, wow, this would have been really hard to detect, would have been really hard to just, you know, find normally. I mean, to me, the fact that they're using multiple mutexes, right, or is it mutexi, I don't know, but right, and things like that to prevent compilation errors, you know,
to silence them, to quiet them down. It's mind-boggling.
You know, and they're going, oh, some guy might actually go through a log file and see this. Let's make sure that doesn't happen, right? Like,
no, the attention to detail on this hack was next level. It really was. And really, I think the only thing you can do is compare the compiled binaries decompiled to the source code, and that is just a very, very hard thing to implement. But my goodness, that's like a sledgehammer approach to stop something like this from happening again. But the key takeaway for me is bad guys do this. They talk to each other. This wasn't just a hack. It was built on a bunch of other things that already existed and that inject those things into your system using this. So they're working together. This is a beautiful step to getting to that point where companies that are on this side of that world can start working together and say, look, this can happen.
And it wasn't necessarily financially motivated either.
It's no, well, not against SolarWinds. I don't think they were trying to kill SolarWinds or to make that product irrelevant. They were trying to take advantage of every company that had SolarWinds. I mean, there's so many hacks that have happened like this. There's, you know, Apache Struts or whatever it is that a while ago that happened. This is what happens when you use a third-party product. This is a major backbone piece for not a third-party product, but you know, a corporate product, a thing you have to buy, which is it's crazy. I mean, the world is a little bit scary, but there are ways to protect yourself, or at least put the sensible modes of protection in. BigFix is a piece of it. AppSec is a piece of it. Yes, you still need firewalls for crying out loud, even though you can get around them. You still need them for the obvious ones. But man, oh man, what a hack.
I mean, if you look at the list of people that started issuing kind of security advisories about this, you'll see some really, really big names on that. We're not talking, you know, commercial names. It's proper government institutions and agencies telling people how to tackle this. So it was quite a big one. Now, when I was reading about this, as you were talking about it, and you mentioned something there, zero trust, right?
Yeah.
That's something that we kind of, and I've seen Colin talking about this in AppSec a lot. Whenever you go to that customers and they tell you, oh, I trust this data source, when it's external, you know, when they tell me it's external, that conversation is easily done. But how do you defend yourself against, I trust this database? And yes. Colin did some amazing research a while back with the customer showing them, hey, don't trust the database. Actually, don't trust anything in anyone if it's not your application, because that's what happens, unfortunately. Someone forgets to do something or someone finds a way in through something else. Yes, your application, and then you end up with this. So it's definitely a lesson for everyone.
It's almost like you can't even trust your source code, let alone the data that source code accesses. And to be quite honest, yes, you should be able to prove to yourself, I can't trust this. And you should start asking yourself the question, how do I do just that? How do I trust this in every aspect?
The other bit of advice we were given was that, you know, our fun facts are great, but, you know, we probably better off having them towards the end. So those who really want to stay dedicated to us can listen to the things that are non-related. So we've moved our fun fact to the end, and we're not going to do individual fun facts. We're going to just do one each, maybe each episode. I don't know how it will go. We'll work that one out. But I saw something, and I've decided that I think this is highly suitable. Booze fairies. Have you heard of booze fairies, guys?
I have not, but I am interested.
Yes. Not up until this very moment.
It's a thing that started in the US. And it's kind of like a play it forward type thing. So someone leaves booze on your doorstep in a little basket and a little note of who you need to pass it on to next. And seemingly it started with women only. It's a female type thing where you leave booze for other females. And what's particularly funny is beyond that, guys have started up whiskey wizards, which is a sort of thing. but you know, it ultimately this is a thing for, I don't know, proving that things exist, you know. So it's a pandemic inspired trend in the US where some folks are anonymously dropping off care packages, usually with alcohol, at doorsteps.
Interesting. Here's your medicine for the day. Take two and call me in the morning. Yes, please.
So it's a booze fairy or a wine fairy or a beer fairy or a whiskey wizard. I like the whiskey wizard.
Whiskey wizard's pretty good.
Would there be a gin genie in that game?
Oh, there you go. I would like a gin genie.
Oh my god.
Are you sure?
Yes, I would.
But if you drink enough of it, it will grant you 3 wishes, Chris.
Will it? I wish I had more gin.
recursion, recursivity doesn't work with the wishes. You know that.
Yeah. I wish I had more wishes. You can't wish for more wishes.
You can't make someone love you. No,
oh my gosh, the wish rules.
Yeah. Well, you can make Chris if you invoke the gin genie.
But yeah. Rob and Chris, you're both in the U.S. Have the booze fairies not called to you yet? No,
they haven't given me anything. No, what the crap? Do I have to lose a tooth or something?
They probably figure that the breweries are so close, you could just go next door.
That's true. There's so many around here. No, but
this sounds like around Halloween, right? People do kind of the whole boo thing where they put stuff on your door. Or my neighborhood years ago, somebody had like this big ceramic deer that went lawn to lawn, and it showed up on a different lawn every night. So.
It's like Elf on the Shelf for bored adults.
Yeah, exactly. This sounds
at college, we used to do gnoming. So we used to steal garden gnomes and take them away on holiday and take photos of them and send postcards back.
Hanging with my gnomie.
Nice. Yeah. You were inventing Travelocity before anyone knew it.
Something like that.
Yes. So is this going to happen in Britain then? Is this like, are people...
It's hard to tell until I see the booze fairy. I cannot make any comment. That being said, I did receive a bottle of whiskey.
Did you?
For Christmas.
I didn't really know you got a whiskey wizard visit.
I think I had a whiskey wizard visit indeed.
It was a test run.
It sounds good to me.
Well, I mean, you could combine it with your newspaper run.
I could start delivering booze to everyone in the neighborhood instead. Yeah.
I thought Colin was only doing this for the elderly. I think.
They drink as well.
They need a booze fairy or two, or five, or ten.
we have a bean fairy locally. If that counts.
It does not. It is not a booze fairy.
It is a booze fairy
or a gin genie.
So what's the connection to Dry January though, right?
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that's banned. It shouldn't happen. Dry January should be cancelled this year. It's like you can't.
I've never even heard of a dry January. Why would you have a dry January?
Yeah, exactly.
Because you killed your liver in December, I guess. It's like.
No, probably New Year's Eve. I mean, at a certain age, you don't really get rip roaring drunk every night of your life anymore because you pay for it for 4 days. So I'm just saying, moderation in January, maybe we should change it to that name. Moderate January, moderately dry.
I used to do the month of May not. So may not do that in May.
Wow.
I thought may not the day shall pass without a drink. May not.
Don't put me in a box.
We're closing it in the end of this episode. I think it's really important that we let people know who we're going to have on our next episode. And Rob, you've got a few words to say about our very special guests. Yeah, we've got two guests.
I'm very excited about this, too. Our guests are going to be Kavya Perlman and Thomas Henning. And many of you may know Kavya from the work that she's been doing over the years in cybersecurity. Kavya is a virtual reality expert and works with an organization called XRSI, making privacy frameworks for the virtual reality space. So everything from medicine to, games on Oculus to how these things interact with us. She's done a tremendous amount of work in there. You may not realize, but Kavya was the former CISO for Second Life back when that was in its heyday and had a tremendous amount of experience. So I'm really excited to talk to her about this intersection of the virtual reality world with application security, data privacy, all of these things that are starting to come together in folks' space. So episode 2 is going to be amazing.
Excellent. I'd be curious to see when they add machine learning to that, so the virtual, the artificial world can create an artificial world.
Exactly. Like when you look in the mirror in a dressing room and you just see ad infinitum.
Yes. Recursion. In order to understand recursion, you must first understand recursion.
Did you guys hear about the research someone was doing with the machine learning algorithm to remove bugs from their code? And the final step was that the algorithm deleted the entire code base.
No bugs.
No bugs.
Did it. That's right. Here's your gold star.
I win.
That's right. Yeah. Turns out no code is bug free. How's that happen? Also doesn't correct, do anything.
Right? It is correct. You know, it's a bit, it's a step too far. But...
Yeah, I bet there's no security flaws in it either. Yeah, yeah. Turns out it's the back door with no code.
Right. I think they named it Skynet, right?
Yeah. Oh.
Well, gents.
No, not Skynet.
We're on time here as normal. So, look, woo-hoo. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Florin, for joining us for this episode. I hope people like the new format. It's certainly going to be a little bit more easier to get to some of the content that people want to listen to. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, thank you, Colin. Chris, Florin, good to see you, bud.
Always a good time.